Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Standing on My Soapbox, the weekly rant, rave, and review radio show where we talk all of the good, the bad, and the ugly of the past week's current events. Join your host, Scott Fullerton, and this week's special guest co-host,
actor-producer Emerson Collins.
You're also invited to call in and stand on my soapbox with us. Call now at 347-989-0126 to join the conversation. Now, here he is, stepping up to the microphone, your host, Scott Fullerton.
Oh my goodness, I so hate that opening. I got to fix it every week. Guys, welcome everybody to Standing on My Soapbox. It is Wednesday, March 1st. We have a lot to talk about today in LGBT news, pop culture, politics. You are all invited to join the conversation. If you want to listen in, if you're listening in live, call us at 347-989-0126. We'll try to get all the calls we can. I've also opened the chat room today. I don't always do that. But if you're a little shy and have a question or comment on any of our topics, jump in the chat room. If you're on Blog Talk Radio, scroll down to the bottom. You'll see the chat box there, and feel free to chime on in. But let's get right to it. Introduce my very special co-host today. You know him from the People's Couch, the Dell and Emerson Radio Show, Southern Baptist Sissies, and so much more. He's an actor, producer, writer, and his newest film, which he both co-produced and co-starred in, A Very Sordid Wedding, has its world premiere March 10th in beautiful Palm Springs, California. Then it's soon going to be in selected theaters near you. I can't wait to talk to him more. Please welcome to the show, Emerson Collins. Emerson, how you doing?
I'm so good. Oh, it's so exciting to be here on a soapbox opportunity.
You know, I'm so excited to have you. I've had the pleasure of having you on the interview show on Left and Straight Show a couple times, and I haven't had you on my soapbox yet, so thanks for standing on up.
Oh, it's truly my pleasure. You know I like to rant and rave about many a thing.
There, you are actually probably one of the inspirations for the title, because I do too. The other show is all interview and mostly entertainment, foodies, and books. I don't get to rant on things too much, and I really wanted to have a chance to do it. And I always remember listening to you and Dell and Justin and everything, and you're standing off your soapbox and said, well, it's time for me to stand on it. We'll have a little fun.
Absolutely. For me, it started with, you know, long Facebook rants once upon a very long time ago. And when I knew one was particularly long, I would end it with the phrase soapbox dismount.
There you go.
So you had to imagine that, sort of like Carrie Strug at the 96 Olympics, you know, hobbling on one ankle. That was how I imagined jumping off my soapbox.
There you go. Exactly. Well, welcome. I'm glad we're sitting up. So much to talk about in the news today, but let's start with a big congratulations to you. You've been working your little butt off on this movie, and it's come to fruition. Congratulations. Are you excited?
Thank you. Yes, we're extremely excited. We released the trailer for A Very Sordid Wedding yesterday, you know, which was sort of our first real opportunity to show the whole world some images and sound of this thing we've been working on for 2 years, of course, that is the culmination of a 17-year journey since the original Sordid Lies film. So, yes, we're thrilled to be at the finish line of making the movie and extremely excited to be at the beginning of the process of sharing it with everyone everywhere.
Well, I thank you and Dell so much for letting me be one of the privileged few to do a sneak peek at it. And I think it's everything the fans are going to want and more. The story is fantastic, seamlessly done. It's hard to tell you were in two different cities filming this thing because it's so seamless. It looks so well put together. Just a great job for both of you guys.
Well, and it was a huge result of the amazing production company we worked with in Canada, Buffalo Gal Pictures, and our incredible director of photography, Paul Suderman, who really helped craft that Winnipeg landscape and towns around there to make it really look and feel like Texas, even though it was, 30 degrees outside the day we shot the Beehive and snow flurry. So combining that with the day that Alec and Leslie and I shot in a bar in Dallas, where it was 110 degrees at the end of July, it was definitely ran the full gamut of production experiences, and we were really lucky to have two incredible crews in two different cities.
Oh, my goodness. Now, people that aren't familiar with – some people might not have been able to see the television series because you're actually acting on the television series, but you weren't part of the original Sordid Lies movie. You actually have a nice part. Congratulations, co-star and role, and it was fantastic. How was it to be in front of the camera as well as producing?
Thank you. You know, it was really fun. It's sort of the bargain that Dell and I have, that I'm more than happy to produce his brilliant material as long as I get to be in it. And he wrote this part for me. I think it was typecasting, because it's a bisexual serial killer with no testicles. So, you know, it's something that's right in my wheelhouse, I feel like.
There you go. I love it. The voice, I think the voice was amazing. I don't want you to give it away today, but we have heard it before from you, I think, on some of your little video outings on Facebook. But I think it's going to surprise a lot of people.
Well, you know, it was fun. It was part of, you know, he and I really got into, you know, it was what prompted the giant haircut as I got rid of the old shake and go wig for this role with the tattoos. And then a lot of it, funny enough, is really just based in, you know, so many of the guys I grew up with in Texas that, you know, just sort of walk a certain way and talk a certain way, and built in that. And then now I don't know any serial killers. I will put that out there. That part is acting, but the rest of it, yeah, it's based a little bit in some of that mask for mask joking that I've done. And also sort of fun, you know, to inhabit this sort of character and fight against the occasional stereotype that an openly gay actor can't believably play, you know, a masculine dude, which is so, you know, absurd.
Right. Well, I you had me believing all the way. I thought you acted the hell out of it. The only time you broke character for me, since I kind of stalk you on social media, is when you got into the truck. It's like, he doesn't drive. Blake does all the driving. But other than that, I was pretty good. Now, how was it to actually get to act against? I mean, Southern Baptist Sissies is where I first came to know you, which was an amazing piece of work that you've done. But it was really a lot of monologue and kind of describing. You're actually acting against people. How was it working with Alec and Leslie? That had to be a lot of fun.
You know, it was absolutely a blast. There's something about, you know, stepping onto set with two people that are legitimately comedic geniuses. And of course, Leslie with that ability to turn on a dime, and, you know, that he did in Sissies. And so knowing that all of my scene work would be with Leslie Jordan, there was definitely an element of, okay, be prepared and come to the table, because the worst thing that happens is he mops you off the screen. And of course, they're both delightful human beings and were hilarious as we, you know, built through our fight scene. And Alec is a very good friend, and we were thrilled to have him come play with us for a day. So, you know, it's really an incredible blessing. It's a great part, which I'm grateful to Del for, with genius talent. And you can't ask for much more on the acting part of the experience.
Well, I think it's going to be a huge success. We were able to talk to Del on Monday, and we had the pleasure of talking to Anne and Rosemary and Newell last week. I think everyone is so psyched for this. It's going to be so much fun. We'll talk a little more later in the show. I want to talk about the premiere you guys got all that weekend. When you get to host that comedy brunch, that's going to be just something. I wish I was there for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. Let's jump into a little bit of let's start with LGBT news today. See what you'd like to talk about. I'll open with some breaking news to me. I know you are a huge fan of the drag races and drag queens in general. And the breaking news today was that it's moving to VH1 on Friday nights at 8 o'clock. Did you hear about that? And what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, yes. I have so many thoughts. You know, one, there's a huge excitement on coming on the tails of RuPaul deservedly winning the Emmy, you know, for hosting the show, that the switch to VH1 is an exciting opportunity to get it to a much larger audience. Drag Race is becoming such a huge cultural influence, and I love that. I've always said that drag queens are sort of my Disneyland. My first experience in a gay bar was seeing the drag show at the Rose Room, which, funny enough, is why we used it in a very sort of wedding, because Kathy Nova, that we use in the movie, and Crystal Summers were performing at the first time I ever went to a gay club. So drag is certainly a huge part of queer culture for me. I'm a little bit concerned, I'll be honest, about the move to Friday night, because there's been a really great thing happen across the country the last 8-9 seasons, where so many gay bars and queer-specific bars have done big viewing parties hosted by local drag queens, bringing in, you know, queens from other seasons. It's made it such a destination viewing party community opportunity, and I get a little worried that now with the move to Friday night, you know, the bars are genuinely busy on Fridays anyway, and this drove a lot of people out on Monday night. So I'm a little worried that some of that community watching aspect of it will go down, but I'm sure they weighed the balance between that and, you know, getting more eyeballs on the show. So I guess we'll see. I just, you know, because one of the benefits of our culture now is that people coming out into more accepting environments and culture don't necessarily need queer-specific spaces, and I feel like Drag Race viewing parties drove a lot of younger people specifically to gay bars that wouldn't necessarily have felt like they needed that space the way some of us that grew up in them do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of feel the same thing. The 8 o'clock is a little early, too. I think even if they did have events on a Friday, no one's going to be there 8 o'clock in the afternoon, usually, or in the afternoon for us gays, evening for other people.
I know, that's disco nap time.
Exactly. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, like you said, they had such a huge season last year, especially the All-Stars, and winning that Emmy was such a big thing that this is going to be kind of cool. But it's going to be interesting to see how it works.
Well, and, what, and then, the logo, you know, I have a special place in my heart for them because we did sort of live the series with them. And now, you know, VH1's going to get all the credit for all the work Logo's been doing.
Right. Well, that is another aspect of one of the articles I read today. It's wondering, that is its flagship show. What's going to happen to Logo now? I mean, Here TV went the way of pay-per-view kind of thing. What's going to happen to Logo?
I mean, they've got smart people over there, so I'm sure they'll figure something else. Their senior vice president of programming was over our show when we did Sorted Lives the series eons ago. So they've got great people. So as long as they're getting Viacom support, I'm sure they'll figure something out.
That's true. And they're going to do all the repeats, too. And so maybe the bars can use those for how they're kind of working their system. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting, that's for sure.
Agreed.
And then we have, can you believe we have a miniseries on primetime television on a major network? Have you been able to catch the We Will Rise yet?
I have. The first 2 hours, like, I was moved. I was up off the couch. I was crying. You're so right. You know, we can't understate the importance of one of the three major networks devoting 8 hours of primetime television to telling queer history, you know, because one of the interesting things about how I think many people come up and out in the community is you don't have a landing place necessarily to learn a lot of that. You know, things right. that I take for granted. I was watching with several other people and I just assumed everybody knew who Cleve Jones was and they didn't know who he was. And to me, he's such an important part of, you know, the Harvey Milk part of the story and creating the AIDS quilt. And so it's exquisitely done. All the applause to Dustin Lance Black and to Gus Van Sant for the incredible care they put in telling the story.
It's just great to see them back again. I mean, Dustin did such a great job writing Milk, and of course that's where Gus directed that. Now they're back together again. And the whole project, I thought, like you said, was done so well. Just the history, that's one of my big things as an LGBT advocate, is the history. I think we're getting so many more and more youth that are kind of opening up and almost homogenizing it, which is a good thing, but it's also they're not learning the history as well. So I really hope people will take this to heart and learn the history we're going to see through it.
Absolutely. And I was super impressed with a couple of things. You know, it's clearly they came at it with an intersectional mindset when you look at how much they're focusing on the women's marches and the impact of the lesbian coming out process on the women's organizations and how it reaches across the various subjects of our culture. And I really appreciated the brief scene where the Black naval officer walked into the white gay bar in the Tenderloin and was turned out, you know, addressing that there's racism in our community, you know, that exists in our culture.
Right.
I really feel like it's impressive how many different kinds of issues they're addressing within the community and also outside, which I feel like is so relevant, not just as history, but as to what we're doing today and dealing with continuously in representation in our own media.
Sure. And even Dustin Lance Black and Whoopi Goldberg were on Seth Meyers last night. And Dustin said when he was researching this and everything, he was going to everywhere trying to ask what are the key pivotal LGBT characters that he worked obviously with Cleve during Milk. But he was trying to find other people. And the help me with the lead girl. Is it Roma or Romy?
Roma.
I'm blanking. Okay. He said he didn't really even know her story and had to ask Cleve for an introduction. And it's just great that he actually learned a lot on his own and brought all those stories together. Like you said, not just our movement, the women's movement, pulling everything together. It's just such a testament to what great writing can be. And it's going to be exciting. We have three more nights. It's going to be tonight, tomorrow, and Friday at 9 o'clock. And it's just pretty exciting.
Well, and I also have a huge appreciation for the fact that they use so many out visible actors in the project. You know, all the trans characters are played by trans actors. We have Keira Knight and Dennis O'Hare. And, you know, it's so nice to see the people who have opened up and been out as a part of their career also being included in this because they're talented and absolutely should. But I appreciate that focus as well.
Definitely. Any LGBT news that's on your radar you want to talk?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, today in our ongoing, you know, struggle and inequality, and of course I'm focused on it with the movie and everything, but today in front of the Texas Supreme Court, they're hearing a case challenging Houston extending marriage benefits to same-sex married civil employees. And the Texas Supreme Court had turned down the case, but the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, and religious leaders pushed it. They're basically trying to challenge some aspects of the Obergefell marriage equality decision. So,
right,
you know, all these things that we feel are locked in place, you know, and are done, there's still people nipping at the heels. It's sort of why Wendell re-envisioned the script for A Very Sordid Wedding, and we, you know, switched from it to place it after the marriage equality decision to look at these religious freedom bills and people who feel like somehow their religious freedom is being impinged upon by other people's marriage life, that's still really existent. You know, Missouri denied an equal rights ordinance amendment in their Senate today or yesterday to add sexual orientation and gender identity. It's like we're still seeing all of this, and with all the attention we're paying to 45 and what he is and isn't doing, we have to remember how much is happening at the local and state level that we have to be
right.
vigilant against.
Yeah, I think Tennessee has three new laws coming at them now. A new one just went in yesterday, and it's trying to be done piecemeal by piecemeal, take it apart. And it's we're going to have some challenges to come. It's not an over and done with settled law yet at this point, I don't think. So there's a lot of work left to do. Now, I did see one thing that kind of – my brother lives just over the border from Charlotte, North Carolina, works out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Of course, with everything happening with the transgender bill and all everything happening in that state and the recent election there, he kind of sends me news articles every once in a while to kind of keep me up to speed. And I got a great little article from him today. Charlotte just received a $1.5 million donation from Sarah Belk Gambrill. And I guess the Belk stores are a big thing in the South there. I'm not too familiar with them. But she is a big heiress. She's plus 94 years old. And her daughter, Sally Gambrill, runs this foundation, the trust that they use. And her teenage son, Sally's teenage son, came out as gay just very recently. And so her and the grandmother decided to do $1.5 million. They have a group there called Out Youth, Time Out Youth. And they're looking to renovate an office space they found to make it an LGBT spot for youth support and for a shelter. And this $1.5 million covers about half of the $3.4 million I think they're going to need to get this done. So I always like when a little good news comes across the pike, too. So that's kind of exciting.
Absolutely. You know, I think as we gird in for various struggles, celebrating victories is an important part of the process, you know, in order to keep from burning out, which is a very real thing, I think, for activists and activist-minded people. You know, it can be so overwhelming saying, well, this and this is happening there and this is this and I need to go to this and call this person. And remembering to take time, you know, to spend with people that you love and to celebrate little victories as they happen. And big $1.5 million, that's a big victory. But you're absolutely right. We should celebrate those things.
And now you alluded to a little bit. Let's go back to A Very Sort of Wedding for a second here and talk a little about the plot, because like you said, this is now marriage equality came. When Dell originally wrote this, the decision hadn't come down on Obergefell. And so now it's come down. And what's kind of – how is this affecting the town? Is that – give us a general plot overview for those that saw the play or saw the original movie and play and are wondering what's going to happen next in the sequel.
Well, so the cliff notes, for those who may not know at all, the original sort of live film was essentially the story of a young gay man coming out to his crazy Texas family. And so the sequel picks up 17 years later – with that same family in that same small town, 5 weeks or 4 weeks after the marriage equality decision has happened, that the town is not quite ready to deal with it. So where the first film was a very personal and family-insulated story, this sort of extends out to the local church that's planning what we've called an anti-equality rally, which of course is a ridiculous name, but it's essentially the kind of thing that we saw happening immediately. And there are people working and organizing to make that happen to ensure that their county clerks don't issue marriage licenses, similar to Kim Davis. You know, they don't want the flower shops and everyone to be bothered. And of course, on the other side of town at Bubba's Bar, Wardell and company are planning a 17-year anniversary of Peggy's death, who, of course, in the series was played by Rue McClanahan. And as she has since passed, we wanted to include her in the movie, and her estate was great and let us use all of her photos. So the movie is set up for big confrontations as the bar holds their reunion memorial on the same night as the anti-equality rally, and madness ensues. And what I found sort of impressive about what Dell has done with this story over the years, when you think about it, where we were in the culture in 2000 when Sorted Lives came out, you know, we were only 3 years after Ellen coming out. We were in the early seasons of Will and Grace, and Queer as Folk would premiere later that year. I mean, we were very early in this new generation of queer representation and people coming out. And so that story, excuse me, of this boy coming out was very new and relevant. And, you know, we saw a lot of coming out stories, you know, following that. And here we are 17 years later. And once again, Dell's sort of on the forefront of the storytelling of the movement as the first sort of film addressing post-marriage equality response and reaction in conservative communities in a way that we're still seeing, you know, literally the stories we've just talked about, you know, all of this resistance to the advancement of LGBTQ rights. And it's framed through marriage equality, but of course the religious freedom bills address so many more things, and we see so much of what's happening with the transgender community wrapped up in the bathroom bill discussion. But of course it's much more than that. Three trans women of color have been murdered in the last week. You know, the protections for that most vulnerable and marginalized part of our community are so important. So of course the movie can't address everything, but it's done in that way that Dell has a magical ability to talk about some really serious things through really, really, really high comedy through these characters that we love. So I think there will be something for everybody. And I hope that the way so many of Dell's fans use the first film to come out to their families, you know, by watching it together and being able to laugh together, that there will be people who can use this movie to address these, this similar situation about wanting to get married and what it means to have your rights discussed, you know, in communities, in the community around you, that it will be able to be used in a similar way, and we'll all get to laugh along the way.
Exactly, and it does it so well. People are going to be so impressed by it. It's so much fun. I loved the hair salon scene with Roger.
Oh, yeah.
My God, I was busting a gut for that. I mean, it's just fun where he takes it and kind of moves us to. We have all of the cast kind of combined from the original movie and television series, and you got great co-stars. We have Alec Mappa, who you said you get to play against a bit, Levi Crison. Like I was telling Dell the other day, I was a huge fan of Beth Grant, but oh my God, did Dale Dickey just knock it out of the park? I mean, it was just an amazing, amazing stuff.
Yeah, it really is. You know, we're so lucky. It's in our little indie film, but we have 32 actors, you know, so many of the original stars and so many of the series stars, and as you said, Alec and Tony winner Levi, who's been in our family for a long time but not in our project, and Alex Ponovic, who's an amazing Canadian actor that was a friend of Caroline Ray's that plays her love interest, who's a big star in sci-fi's Van Helsing right now, and of course Carol Cook as an icon of LGBT activism, playing Caroline Ray's mother. So it's really, really exciting, and of course, our incredibly special cameo from Miss Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, that was something else. That was so appropriate. And of course we have to give homage to Sarah. I mean, it was fun. I loved it. The way the trailer portrayed was fantastic. It was done good. It was a good tribute.
Yeah, I know. Our dear sweet Juanita, who of course fans know that we lost, you know, since we shot the movie, and we feel so fortunate to have her final performance with us, and that this will be a big love letter to all the Juanita fans. I think they will thoroughly enjoy her contributions, her nonsense contributions, I should say, to this final chapter of the Sorted story.
Always so fun to have a little Juanita one-liner, that's for darn sure. Let's
Absolutely.
Go ahead and take a quick break. Let's kind of wet our whistles, take a drink here, let everyone think. If you want to call in, guys, I see a couple of you in the chat room. I see some people listening out there. Don't be afraid to call in. It's 347-989-0126. Or if you have a question in the chat room, go ahead and let us know. Speaking of Levi, he's been on the show. Of course, he's so talented. We know him from Million Dollar Quartet. Let's play a little Levi Cries So Much Better. And we'll be back with Emerson Collins in just a couple of moments.
Ooh, need an afternoon drive. I've been working too hard, I wanna leave it all behind me. Pushing and pulling, yeah, the world keeps spinning around and around. But I go with the flow, nobody gonna get me down. See, I tell you the secret about the way that love's gonna be. It's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Getting hold of me. Your body unwind. You see, you got everything you want. You just gotta open up your eyes. Sing it, holding on to something when there's nothing that you can do to change it. Just let it go with the flow. Get about your business doing you. Oh, say, I tell you a little secret, how to make it only. Oh, it's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Yes, get it hold of me. It's so much better now. Baby love, don't you know that it's so much better now. Feel good to let it go. And it's so much better now. Baby love, don't you know that it's so much better now. And it feels good to let it go. So let it go. Yeah, they tell you a little secret, how to make it on easy street. It's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Get a hold of me.
Alrighty, guys, we are back. That is Levi Christ with So Much Better, who has a fun part in A Very Merry Wedding. We are talking to the producer and co-star, Emerson Collins. Let's jump into a little bit of politics, Emerson. We'll finish up on a more happier note with pop culture, because I know you and I can get passionate about our politics here as we go.
Lord, yeah.
what do you think about that speech last night?
Well, I am not in the camp that thinks that we should be applauding or impressed by the fact that 45 managed to stand up there and read aloud without yelling at anybody. I mean, I feel like at some point you've lowered the bar so low that literally there's not a person on the planet that can limbo under it. So I feel like the fact that the great conversation today is about the style of the speech rather than the substance, as though it's somehow presidential to do slightly better than you've done up to this point, is a loss for our country and democracy, because the content was still filled with things that are not true, with fear-mongering against immigrants. And so I just don't know how, you know, okay, yay. Like, he managed to not seem like a complete imbecile. That's not a win.
Exactly.
I don't
it's
think.
It's that whole a broke clock is right twice a day. You can have it toned for one day. It doesn't mean that you're working correctly. So it's like, I thought he hit the right notes of what people were wanting to hear from his side of the aisle, but it doesn't mean anything. His actions are not proving any of it. So good on you for having
a little
talk there.
You know, and of course it's always the case where you get the confirmation bias of the president that you support says the things that you like to hear, and these addresses aren't necessarily filled with a great deal of detail on a typical basis, so I'm not treating him more difficultly than his predecessors. But I feel like the fact that there continues to be plans that don't seem realistic, that there's still not substance out about even how to make possible and taking credit for things that he doesn't have anything to do with. And that weird, incredibly horrifying moment where he acted like the dead Navy SEAL would be thrilled that he had the longest ovation, as though that's something, you know, that other people care about in the way he cares about, sort of demonstrates
exactly.
a crass lack of respect, I guess. I don't know. It's just so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And not to take anything away from the SEAL's actions and his contribution and his sacrifice, and certainly the emotion of his widow in any way, and certainly she and he deserve that applause for, you know, standing up and making it possible for us to stand on our soapboxes today and talk about it. That it was revealing once again what his priorities were, that his thought at the end of it, the length of the ovation matters.
Right. That's the whole thing. That's what matters to him. And then you get we have this stock rally market today. The market rally is like 300 points today. And it's like, oh, the speech really set you. It's like, the stock market is a bunch of rich people that are friends of his. It's really not a representative of the people. And
given. My counter to that is like, of course it rallied today because you didn't make an ass of yourself and everyone's relieved. Like that is,
right.
There is palpable relief that it wasn't terrible, you know, that he didn't go off the teleprompter and say something horrifying like the, you know, reported statement that he made yesterday that possibly the Jewish cultural centers and schools that are receiving bomb threats, that possibly some of it was coming from the reverse side, you know. He didn't do anything like that. So yay, I guess.
It's silly. And it's funny, you see, I mean, of course there's no loss between the Bush family and everything, but just to see George W. Bush come out of hiding for 8 years, basically, and basically condemn him, I think. I thought that was very telling. I mean, you got to put the context with it, I'm sure he was kind of protecting his brother too a bit, but it's still serious for another president to come out and say something like that.
Well, particularly one who was not good. You know, it's not like this makes George W. Bush's actions better, but for someone
exactly.
that was that bad to be saying that you're that much worse, certainly that is telling.
And even George Bush was pretty good about all the AIDS funding for different countries and stuff, and now Trump's calling about taking that away, and it's just another cluster muck every single day. It just gets, you never know what's going to happen.
Like, I know, you open the news and take a deep breath before you look. Like, what now?
I do like one of the kind of memes going around now. It could be really fun, and I don't know if it'll ever happen, but his deciding not to go to the correspondence dinner, there's a meme or request that go around to get all the other former living presidents to go there in his place. I would love to see that. That would just
right?
make me very happy. That would make me
Although
happy.
Although I'd thoroughly enjoy it if Kate McKinnon hosted Hillary Clinton.
Oh, I know, huh? That would be – they haven't decided who's hosting it, have they?
I haven't heard, no.
And I think Samantha Bee was already planning a counter type of event that night.
Yeah,
to counter
it'll
Trump
be interesting to see what happens with that. Although I love her. She's one of the great new voices in political response, satirical comedy with incisive commentary. And I will say, you know, that leads me to – it's like the one – what I choose to keep looking at the positive of where we are today is it seems like so many people I know who were not regularly engaged in politics, you know, who felt like, you know, you pay attention sort of to the election cycle, you vote for president, you know, the renewed spirit of particularly of a younger generation of being daily engaged, of knowing what's happening every day, of calling your representatives regularly, of showing up at town halls to ask questions, of showing up at protests to make your voice heard. I feel like that spirit of a greater American engagement in the political process, it is the silver lining I'm choosing to focus on. It's exciting to see how many people this far after the election are still regularly paying attention to bills that are being proposed, you know, not fighting things after
right.
the fact. So if that changes
that,
in American culture, that's certainly a positive thing.
Yeah, and they're saying that there's indivisible groups like in every district in every state in the country. That could be amazing what could be done with that.
Absolutely.
Like you said, it's good seeing it. I think it could be prolonged. A lot of people are kind of wondering on the lifespan of it, but I think this is something that's here to stay. I think they have engaged the younger community, have engaged the disenfranchised for sure. And I think it's something that's going to keep on moving as we go.
Well, it's like, look at how many people were paying attention to the election of the new DNC chair, you know, last week with Tom Perez. You know, I feel like that's a person whose name was not known by many people that aren't super involved, like, with politics as a career. I feel like that's really demonstrative of a greater enthusiasm. We have LA elections on Tuesday here, and I've seen so many more people paying attention to that. And that's really where, you know, it really does matter, starting at your local level, engaging in your local politics, knowing who your local people are. Those are the people that grow to your city level, to your level, that eventually become national politicians. It really does start by engaging in your own community.
Yeah, it's really cool. And we have actually one of our state senators, he's one of the minority whip in Ohio here, has been very friendly to the LGBT community. He's been on my show before, and he just announced today that he's going to run for the one of the Democrats running for governor this year. And it's great to
see
these openly friendly LGBT people. I mean, he's young. He's like 40-something years old. And I think if he gets the name recognition out there, I mean, we're lucky to have Tim Ryan here, who got a lot of name recognition when he went against Pelosi. He actually represents my district where I live from and used to own a business right next door to his campaign. He used to come for lunch all the time. He just really is a good guy and really wants things to work. I was very worried. He was very afraid of the LGBT community back in the day, I have to say. When I knew him as a business owner, I was out advocating quite as much. And then when I became chairman of the Pride Center here in Northeast Ohio and in my area, and we had a tough time getting him to speak, but he finally got turned around a little bit and I was pretty impressed. But we have some interesting politics going on here in Ohio.
Absolutely. It's like my local rep from California for my district is Adam Schiff. It's been all over the news everywhere. You know, it's exciting when you have reps that you can really get behind and really support their agenda. He had a town hall here Friday night, and the auditorium was completely full, and they filled the overflow space. So people are showing up.
Super. Very good. All right. Is that enough? Did we get it out of our system, or is there anything else you wanted to touch on?
I mean, I feel like that's maybe enough on this on him for today.
There you go. I could keep my blood pressure medicine at bay. If we only have 15 minutes at a time or so, we're good. Then I'm happy.
Yes.
My one
visual comment from the speech last night is seeing 45 and Pence and Paul Ryan up there as the trio. You know, those death panels that everyone was fear-mongering with about the Affordable Care Act early on. I was like, well, if there was going to be a death panel, I feel like that's what it would look like.
There you go. And I love that you've adopted, as I've adopted, that we're calling him 45. I think I'm loving every second of that. You don't even know.
Yep. I just don't need the trolls. I don't need that. Like, nope. I'm more than happy to have a conversation with somebody, but like Voldemort, I don't need to speak his name.
There you go. All right. Well, let's jump into pop culture. Have some over there. I mean, Academy Awards show, things that we live for, and you and your friends are so quick on the finger for tweeting. I love all these events where we can follow you guys live tweeting. How was the show for you? Tell me about it.
I, you know, really enjoyed a lot of the show. I don't know if it's because of the mood of the country and the environment, but I really enjoyed a lot of it. There were definitely some irky moments, the like weird Lion King thing and of course the big brouhaha at the end. But I really did enjoy the evening. More than some in the past, some recent ones I feel like. Because,
yeah,
I mean, I obviously I'm biased because at the end of the day, like a giant queer black film, you know, definitively queer from queer artists you know, from an openly queer playwright turned into a film was the big winner of the night. I mean, there's just nothing like it in history. That is a huge, huge win for the community, and particularly for people of color within the LGBTQ community. You know, so that was the thrill of that, first and foremost, is the big exciting win of the night. Before we talk about any of how it happened, just
right.
That is the focus. That is the win. That is the huge celebratory thing.
Exactly. I mean, that is what we have to concentrate on. You do feel a little bit like their moment in the sun got a little bit overshadowed from the controversy. I'm glad they were able to kind of get their speech out. But like you said, we have to celebrate the reason behind it more than anything else. And I thought it was a great move on their part. I just love that movie. I mean, I saw all of the movies this year, which I don't get to do all the time. And I really did enjoy it. I was a fan of La La Land, but I don't think it was a great picture movie to me. I loved a lot of the elements of it, and I loved a lot of it. But I really wanted to see either Moonlight or Hidden Figures the best picture. So I was very happy at the end.
Yeah, well, I mean, because Moonlight is just poetry on film. The imagery is so beautiful. The way they told the story was fascinating, and to watch these boys grow into men, and the subtlety and the power of the silence and the unspoken. It was just incredibly exquisite as a film, you know, separate from the social commentary importance of what it has achieved. It's just beautiful, beautiful filmmaking. Now, I am in the camp. I loved La La Land. I had a great time. I didn't mind that that every musical theater performer is more gifted than they are. There was something about the roughness of that worked for me. There was a moment when Emma Stone stands there talking about maybe I'm not supposed to be doing this that hit me as a performer. I understand all of people's objections, but I didn't love the La La Land versus Moonlight approach. You know, I feel like at this level,
right,
it's always apples and oranges in the comparison, and certainly we have our preferences, but I don't know. I don't go in anymore for deciding like better versus worse so much, because what does that even mean? So much as like what touched you, what moved you more.
Right. And I thought, like I said, I agree. I thought overall it was a very evening. It's a big buildup. I love it every year. I thought it worked really well. Jimmy Kimmel, he's not one of the horses I have in the race. I'm pretty much a Seth Meyers and James Corden guy, but I thought he did a very admirable job. I thought the tourist bit was a train wreck waiting to happen in the buildup to it. But except for going long, I thought it was a pretty funny bit. I was pretty impressed by it.
You know, it's always interesting, this idea of, like, parading, you know, quote, regular people in front of these, like, alien stars. There's something amusing about the juxtaposition. I enjoyed the weird Hunger Games, you know, mana gifts from heaven, although I was disappointed that bit did not end with, like, Jennifer Lawrence running in with a bow and arrow and shooting somebody. Because that just seemed like where we were headed. Because, like, but as to the actual brouhaha itself, I watched a lot of people, you know, talk about how, you know, Moonlight and their producers were robbed of their moment. And I certainly appreciate that perspective, particularly from queer people of color that I know that, you know, feel like it was taken away from having their shining spotlight in the sun. What I'm hoping is that the weird way that now these two movies are tied to this moment that will forever live in Oscar history, I'm hoping it actually means that more people will see Moonlight than would have, because it keeps getting talked about. You know, I hate that they didn't get, like, Moonlight wins, Queer Black Film wins, as the big headline the morning after, but I'm hoping the longevity of the catastrophe will lead to more people seeing that movie and hearing about it, sort of the way the Adele Dazeem thing suddenly made everyone in America learn Idina Menzel's name, and I don't think they would have
right.
from that Oscars broadcast. I'm hoping that that's the result of this, is that it really does more for Moonlight's name brand recognition, for its awareness, for more people seeing the film, is what I'm hoping out of, you know, what clearly, understandably irritated so many people. That's how I saw it.
No, I agree. That point 100%, and I think it is going to, no matter what, it's going to bring it down. Unless there's some huge other flub that takes its place, it's going to go down in history as, remember when Moonlight, and it's going to be interesting in history to see how it comes out in history, because I think it's going to be so long. Is it going to be quaint that an LGBT film won 20 years from now, and that's happening all the time or something? So I think it's going to be kind of fun to see an historical bit, because I think you're right, it's not going to be forgotten anytime soon. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. If anything, what it does is it probably means that La La Land will have a greater place in history than it probably earned, but I'm hoping it doesn't take anything away from Moonlight, and if anything, just enhances it, because the
right.
title will continue to be said and continue to be said and continue to be said as this story gets told.
Let's move on to Beauty and the Beast had a big story in Attitude Magazine the other day, and People Magazine covered the story today at least, and I know you have a pretty huge Disney fan as a roommate there, so you probably heard about this months ago, but Beauty and the Beast kind of is making some news for the Gaston assistant, how do you pronounce his name? You know Lefou?
Lefou.
Lefou. Talk about that for me.
Well, so it's been revealed that Lefou, you know, the supporting villain character, is going to have a specifically and distinctly gay moment in this coming live-action Beauty and the Beast. And which I find really interesting. It's funny that it's being touted as in like the first gay moment in a, you know, main Disney feature, which technically it is, although I've seen really funny and appropriate memes in response saying like, Ursula was basically built as divine. And I feel like Scar probably had some stories to tell. And even Prince John from Robin Hood seemed a little bit swishy. But no, I think it's a great thing. And of course, there's been some laughter, I think, from some of the gay commentary community, but I think remembering, you know, what Disney and, quote, family-friendly, you know, means to a certain portion of the country, you know, it's still another advancement step of just matter-of-factly being included in representation. I'd be curious to see how they do it, you know, if it's like he's just been worshiping at Gaston all the time, or what the actual moment is, will be fun to see. I think Bill Condon is a brilliant director. You know, I'm excited with everything we've seen about Beauty and the Beast. I have tickets to see the special, like, band screening the night before at the El Capitan here. So I'm certainly in the Disney fanatic category to see this story.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. Like I said, we don't really know how it's going to be played out, but it is definitely going to be played out. It's definitely, we're going to know that the character is gay by the end of the movie somehow. And I think it's going to be kind of a fun little. You're right. When they said this was going to be the first one, it's like, I'm sure all the Disney animators were like chuckling to themselves because all the little things that they've put in on their own and subtexts that Reiser put in that people might not have caught. So I
right.
love that Josh Gad, who is such a huge supporter of the community, is voicing it. And of course, Subversive, with Olaf being one of the favorite children's characters of all time, playing this role now, that the voice is associated with. It's got so much wry humor to it that you can't help but chuckle a little bit. It's fun.
Yes. I'm sure there's someone somewhere going, well, but why are we always the villains? But I'm like, they're far more entertaining, so I don't have anything to complain about in that character.
There you go. Now, I did read in the article that I read that I didn't know about on for a connection, LGBT connection there, that he did say that the lyricist of the original animated show, Howard Ashman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was battling AIDS at the time they came to him to do the lyric, because it wasn't even necessarily a musical at that time. And he kind of put it on its path to be a musical. He also put it on the path for the Beast to be a more character. They were going to try to make it more Belle-centric originally. And he kind of used it almost as a kind of as a homage to he was going through AIDS at the time. He was suffering through AIDS, and used it as a metaphor that it's kind of a curse brought sorrow upon your friends, and how there might be hope for it. And just the whole backstory behind that I thought was fascinating.
Well, it was really interesting because I've known some pieces of that story. And of course, Howard was keeping it secret from so many people up until they started on this movie. But I knew a lot of that story, but I didn't read someone also talked about how the Kill the Beast number and that whole, like, it's mysterious and scary and we don't know what it is, but we want it dead, was very much guided a little bit by his own sort of struggle with his body and HIV and AIDS. And I found that really interesting insight that I hadn't heard before either. You know, and there's a story I'll share with you, because Blake is a super Disney fan and so has told this repeatedly, that Howard was so ill as they were recording the vocals that they put a speaker in his apartment from the recording studio, and he would call and give notes as they were recording the music. And so there's a moment that's famous to me from the original animated, where Belle is in the opening sitting by the fountain and she sings "new and a bit alarming." You know what that little alarming thing that everyone does?
Right.
Well, when Paige O'Hara was recording that song, they listened to it and Howard called back talking about that moment and told her, he said, "Paige, think Barbara." And so it went from being "new and a bit alarming" to that alarming thing that is so iconically famous. He was that specific with his notes and his thoughts on the musical delivery of these incredible songs that he was such a huge part of shaping.
Oh, that's amazing. And I'm sure your arch buddies Blake and Scott had to go giddy over that little piece of history.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Bringing their
absolutely
two worlds together once again. There you go.
Yeah. And then he didn't live to see the movie open. So, you know, one
right
of the great, great, another example, funny tying our whole hour together, one, another great example of how many creative geniuses from the LGBT community were lost in the early years of the AIDS epidemic, you know, that's being documented in When We Rise. I think in the chapter that we're seeing tonight, I think we start heading that direction. How many of those people we lost for the thing that we didn't know what was
right,
what it was.
So true. Well, let's see what else we got here. Oh, just for a side note, I thought it was kind of interesting. You've been to New York quite a few times. You go to the Waldorf Astoria and eat there?
Yes, I have been.
I love that place. I kind of go there, just iconic. So whenever I go to New York, I try to go there and have a bite of Nosh or a Waldorf salad. But it's closing for 2 to 3 years. Today was the last official day of opening. All the tenants left, all the people that were staying there left by noon today. It's closing for 2 to 3 years of renovation. They're taking the 1,400 guest rooms and turning them into, half of them at least, into condos. It's both, they have to keep the facade of the building because it's such an iconic and historical place in New York. But they're going to change it to condos, still keep the hotel. They're not sure what's going to happen to the rest of it ever since it was bought by this Chinese insurance company. And I thought, well, man, we lost the original, oh, God, what's the place in the park there you want to go to eat in the middle of Central Park? I'm blanking all the time.
I don't know.
Oh, I'll think of it before I go, but it's a famous restaurant that's right in Central Park there that everyone would go eat at. But now we've lost that. Now we're losing the Waldorf Astoria. That was kind of funny in the news today. A little interesting.
Oh, where are people going to get those Waldorf salads?
Exactly.
I mean, they have a whole salad named after themselves. Jeez.
We're going to have to name it to, I guess, this Anbang insurance claim. It's going to be Anbang salad from now on. That's horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I do have another bit of, like, people should check out to share.
Sure.
TBS, I think. Yes, I think. Has a new show called Broing Shade with two comics as the hosts, Brian Safi and Aaron, oh, I forget her last name, but they're brilliant. And it's kind of the queerest thing on TV right now. It is hilariously funny. It's on Tuesday nights for half an hour. Like, I'm not getting paid to promo this. I really think it's that funny and that smart. And I'm almost jealous of what they've achieved. They do a lot of the news that we all love. It's very LGBT news focus. They've talked a lot about trans issues. They've talked a lot about, you know, gay blood bands and various things. And it's really, really, really queer focused and also hilarious. So I would advise anyone and everyone to check it out. It's really smart stuff, and I hope they keep doing it for a long time.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. I have seen it on the listings, but I have not taken the time to check it out yet. I'm not sure what it was about at all, but I have seen the listing for it.
Well, check it out. Now, it's a little jarring because at the end of the show, it immediately starts King of Queens reruns after that. And, like, you know, if you don't know the show, it seems like that's a natural companion piece, except it's not. I mean, while it's delightful to see a young Leah Remini, it's not particularly my brand of humor, but it's sort of hilarious because that's what comes on. So I keep feeling like I'm watching King of Queens as well.
Oh, God, that's hilarious. I love it. Well, man, I think we've got through almost everything on my list. Anything on your list left to go over here, my friend?
That's kind of it. I mean, to wrap up my self-promotional shameless stuff for
I'll get back to that. That's how I want to close the show out. Let's talk about this a little more now and let everyone know about this weekend. We have a heck of a weekend coming up. The first night's already sold out, but talk about the weekend first and then where you're looking to go into some limited release.
So the world premiere of A Very Sort of Weddings is a wedding. It's just, I don't know why I made it plural. is in Palm Springs at the Camelot Theaters, where the original film ran for almost 2 years. They were a huge part of helping us get this movie made, and we're excited to return to the city that really is ultimately what started making Sorted Live a cult classic, and showing up with more than 20 actors for the opening weekend. Yes, the opening night is sold out. Because that sold out so quickly, we added a Saturday night Q&A screening with a bunch of the cast. We're doing a happy hour at Toucans in town that's free with the cast to come by and hang out. We're doing a Sorted comedy brunch with Caroline Ray and Leslie Jordan and Del Shores doing stand-up. So we've got a very Sorted full weekend of events. And it will run exclusively in Palm Springs for 2 weeks. And for those asking, we're in discussion with a bunch of other cities to roll out through April and May and on into June to getting to as many cities as possible. And a big part of it is booking other cities to find art house theaters, you know, is exciting. It's a little bit of a challenge. And the better we do in Palm Springs, the more other cities we'll get to. So for all of the information, we're posting everything. Our brand new trailer is up on Facebook on the Avery Sorted Wedding page, and all ticket links and information are also available on the website at averysortedwedding.com.
Ta-da! Fantastic. It's going to be a good time had by all. Now let's talk about you. Last you've acted here. Last year you had another great second run doing Buyer and Seller. What's next for Emerson Collins here, acting-wise?
Well, here's hoping something. You know, between since Del and I are the two-man band of rolling out this movie, the next 2 or 3 months will be that. But I'm sure hoping that this new haircut and my new mask for mask appearance leads to some other acting opportunities. Because, Lord, I love producing work that I'm passionate about, but I'd sure like to show up somewhere and just say some lines on somebody else's TV show or movie for a while, too.
There you go.
Like
not
every
have
other
to raise the money to do
Los
it, too.
Showing up and auditioning and crossing my fingers.
There you go. Well, Emerson Collins, you know I love you. I think you're one of the smartest persons I know. I love following you. Give them your social media so they can hear all the great things you have to say as I do.
On Twitter, it's at @actuallyEmerson, and then Emerson Collins everywhere else. And I'm super active on my Facebook page, and my website is emersoncollins.com for anything and everything you could possibly never want to know about little old me.
There you go. Well, guys, it's been a great time. Emerson, stay on the line for me. We're going to play off with a little bit of, speaking of La La Land, James Corden, one of my favorite comics and late night hosts. He did a little riff last night on the whole Oscars kerfuffle, reenacting one of the scenes from La La Land. Brings his own take to a unique homemade song here. So this is Corden with his La La Land interview. Thank you very much, Emerson Collins. I had a great time standing on my soapbox, and now you can...
Soapbox dismount.
There you go. Stay on the line. You listen to Standing on My Soapbox. We'll be back in just a couple moments.
I'm Amy, and this is Frank.
Hi. How are you?
Glad we found you.
Me too.
The film shoots in Paris, and we don't have a script.
It's going to be a process. We're going to build a character around the actress. It's a 3-month rehearsal and a 4-month shoot. Okay?
And we thought that you could just tell us a story.
About?
You can just tell us anything.
Anything?
Yeah, just tell us a story. You're a storyteller.
Paint us a picture.
Whenever you're ready.
Picture? My film used to be Best Picture. I remember it was Oscar night. Faye Dunaway said, La La Land won. I remember our whole team jumped on the stage, leapt without looking. I gave speeches until the PricewaterhouseCooper guys came up and said, Moonlight's the winner. Then we all lost our damn minds. Was this a mix-up? A conspiracy? A fix-up? Or was Warren Beatty just blind?
is to the ones who lose. God, I need so much booze. Here's to the ones who hold, who switched that envelope. They told them, moonlight, come give your speech on your film about hand jobs on the beach. This result doesn't seem right. Oscars used to be so wide. So here's to the Ryans who hold back from crying, producers and Chrissy Teigen's man. And here's to my sense of shock, more stunned than The Rock. Here's to unfortunate souls, not happy like that song from Trolls. Trace it all back to that show. Whatever happened, I still don't know. Smiling through it, I don't want to do it again.
All right, guys, we are back. Thanks for today. It was so nice having my good friend Emerson Collins stand up on my soapbox with me. We'll be back next week at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time, standing on our soapbox again with my special co-host, actor Michael Vega. Going to be a great time. Be sure to tune in this Saturday at 11 o'clock for Voices for Change 2.0. Then next Monday and Tuesday, we have Left of Straight Show, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Appreciate having you guys listen in. Thanks so much for being part of it. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Left of Straight. That's LeftOfStr and the number 8. On Facebook, look for the Left of Straight Show page or follow me personally at Scott Fullerton. And as always, never miss an episode. Use your Android, iPhone, or tablet. Go to your app store. Type in Left of Straight Radio, LeftOfStr, the number 8. Radio is our free app. You'll never miss an episode. Download it onto your device, and we appreciate it. It's also on iTunes as well. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Have a great night. We're out of here. Goodbye.